Nelson Mandela's incredible status as the world's most respected statesman was summed up in one tweet in the early hours after his death last week from the British sculptor Deborah Moe, and it simply said, "We are all orphans now." And I must say, in my long life, I've never seen an outpouring of grief to compare with what we're now witnessing and experiencing. But my next guest may feel that it's a bit excessive. Bill Johnson warned at the end of Mandela's term as president in 1999 against the cult of Mandela, and he argued that this craving for a true black superhero was a pointless attempt to find an antidote to the many failures of Africa. Bill, have you softened that view?
Well, not entirely, no, because I do feel that at the root of this outpouring, which is absolutely unprecedented and huge, as you say, there is an enormous hunger on the part of the developed world to find a hero, a saint, a leader from the third world. And I think this is stems...
Well, they certainly can't find them in their own country.
Well, exactly. And we had it for Gandhi. I mean, there was the same sort of tremendous welling up of feeling for Gandhi. And the trouble was, you know, Gandhi condemned modern medicine and doctors and hospitals and trains, and he supported the caste system. He was not really exactly a hero. And Mandela, I think, equally, you know, his government was a failure. It was not at all successful, and he made many very bad mistakes when in power. And he was, of course, what he's remembered for is nothing to do with that. That's all been sort of wiped out. What he's remembered for is his extraordinary courage and fortitude in jail and his generosity in terms of racial reconciliation after he emerged from jail. Those two things are indubitable and huge, and to that extent I can agree with all this outpouring. But I do think a lot of it comes from feelings of guilt over slavery and colonialism and mistreatment of black people around the world down the years, and that people want a sort of absolution by, as it were, washing the feet of the great man. And I do think that's involved in what's going on here.
Let's talk about what you regard as his failures.
Well, there's a long list, I'm afraid. I would start off with the Shell House shootings in 94, when from the ANC headquarters, armed men shot down people in the street, in quite a lot of them. Mandela simply refused to hand over either the men or their weapons, and he got away with it. But, I mean, it was murder in the streets of Johannesburg with AK-47s. And the next thing after that was... they wanted to cut the education budget, so they pensioned off all the most experienced teachers, a blow from which the education system has never recovered. This was followed by a Labour Relations Act of the most extreme kind, probably found anywhere in the world, and that labour law is a major constraint on economic growth. There was then an Affirmative Action Act of also a very extreme kind, and of course then there was the great... arms scandal, when arms deal was done with lots of corruption and crookedness, and that was all on Mandela's watch. I mean, I could go on.
One could make the obvious point that the heroic Winston Churchill was a terrific wartime leader, but not too good in peace.
Well, you could go further, actually. If you examine closely, he made many blunders during the war and was very pig-headed, but he was a great war leader in the same sort of... I mean, that's a good comparison, because what he was remembered for was not that he made a mess out of this, out of the other, like the Dieppe raid and so on, but his fortitude under extraordinary pressure in May 1940, his refusal to give in, and his communication of those feelings to everybody. And that was just a supreme thing. And I mean, the fortitude is an element shared between the two men, obviously.
Okay, that's. I should point out that this is LNL on RN, and I'm talking to you with the sceptical Bill Johnson, author of a number of books, including South Africa's Brave New World, The Beloved Country Since the End of Apartheid. With all of what you're saying, Bill, one would have to nonetheless make the observation that what we seem to have witnessed is that it's so extraordinary as to be fictional. You know, it's as if Nadine Gordimer wrote it, the idea that these circumstances would produce such a remarkable man for all his shortcomings and foibles.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And I mean, when Mandela walked out of jail in 1990, we didn't really know. I mean, even I, who had attended a Mandela rally before he went to jail, I'm one of the few people who can say that, really didn't know what sort of man was going to walk out. We didn't know whether he was going to be a Robert Mugabe or a Hastings Banda or God knows what. And we were extraordinarily lucky that he was what he was. There's no doubt about that at all.
How do you see the future of the ANC, Bill?
Pretty dark, really. They're now very split, factionalised. Tribalism is increasingly important. The economy is doing badly. Debt is increasing. Unemployment among the young is at 50%. And so on. It's a very poorly managed country.
But once again, in defence of South Africa, let us look at Portugal, at Spain, at Italy, at much of the Greece, at much of the Western world, which also has astonishingly high unemployment figures, particularly amongst the young. I mean, no one's getting it right, Bill.
No, I would even say it's better than that, in the sense that South Africa this year is going to have a growth rate of 1.9%, which is very much lower than they need or want, but that would look pretty good in Europe. So I don't think anyone's growing at 1.9 there.
The last time you were on, we were talking about Zimbabwe, and the radical journalist Andile Mngxama thinks Mugabe will be remembered as the figure of liberation, not Mandela. Would that be regarded as an extreme view?
In South Africa, yes. Our people would laugh at it, frankly, mainly.
Okay. So in Obama's reaction to conversations with myself was that Mandela reminded us that he had not been a perfect man. Like all of us, he has his flaws. But it is precisely those imperfections that should inspire each and every one of us. Would you agree?
I think that's well said, actually. Mandela was very modest about himself. He didn't claim this superhero status that's now being attributed to him, anything but. And he was very genial and very good-humoured. And these are all things for which he's remembered. And as I say, it's sort of there's a sort of Teflon effect, you know, that when he did things wrong, which he often did, that's just not remembered anymore.
And when you're particularly grumpy, Bill, you argue that there was never a Mandela miracle.
Well, there wasn't a miracle in the sense that, you know, if there was a miracle in South Africa, it was that the ruling Afrikaner Nationalist Party finally saw the error of its ways and did a U-turn. There wasn't, I mean, once they'd made that move, frankly, and we had universal suffrage, the ANC simply had to accept power, you know, I mean, so.
So
I mean,
the real miracle, in your view, was that de Klerk led the white majority to surrender its power peacefully.
That was remarkable. The ANC taking over was just absolutely predictable after that. What was wonderful about Mandela was that attitude of reconciliation, going to see many of his own worst enemies from before, people who tried to have him hanged, and being friendly to them and shaking their hand and having a cup of tea with them and so forth. I think that communicated itself to the whole country, that if he could do that, well then why should anybody else want bad race relations? And I think that was very important to the whole country.
At some point, I'm trying to find this quote, Winnie Mandela accused her ex of betraying the country. Quote, he agreed to a bad deal for the blacks. The economy remains very much white. Now, she later denied having given this interview. Does she have a point?
I don't really think so. I mean, I wouldn't take her too seriously. It just is a sociological fact that most of the professional expertise and better education still lies with the minorities, with the black, with the white, Indian and coloured population. So they are obviously predominant at the upper levels of commerce and industry. But there are already many black faces on most boards. In fact, I don't suppose there's a board of a leading company now without black people on it. And that process is continuing so that, you know, and more blacks who have been well-trained and educated are coming up. So I think the deracialization of the economy is still a work in progress, but it's going on all right.
Bill Johnson, author of numerous books, including South Africa's Brave New World, the beloved country since the end of apartheid, published by Alan Lane. This is RN, Alan Nell on RN, and coming up, Nadine Gordimer.